Can you give thanks when it seems impossible? David and Sierra Dierking had to answer that question.
Well, we were told very early on that there was a good chance that she might lose limbs. I could see the fingertips start turning black, and then I could see it going up her arm.
I don't deserve good health. I don't deserve an easy life. I don't deserve any of it. I have done nothing to deserve anything that God has given me. He's been more than gracious in what he's given to me.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast for November 24th, 2025. I'm Dana Gresh. Our host is the author of Choosing Gratitude, Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth.
My pastor's wife sent me a social media post that took my breath away, and I've never forgotten it. A man from South Carolina named David Dierking posted it. At the time, David's wife, Sierra, was in the hospital in intensive care and on life support. My pastor's wife wrote, "It looks like she may recover, but they're having to take part of her hand off, something about her fingers turning black due to lack of circulation." Well, that text proved to be an understatement. The doctors ended up needing to do much more than take off part of Sierra's hand. Over these months, she has suffered extreme loss that's difficult to even imagine. But as I watched this family go from one challenge to another, and watching them record this on social media to share it with others, through it all, they kept displaying a heart of amazing gratitude. There's so much more to the story that has transpired since that first social media post, so we're going to start at the beginning and hear the story today and tomorrow. Whatever you may be going through today, believe it or not, you can choose gratitude. So I hope you'll set aside whatever you're doing and listen to this precious example of giving thanks in all circumstances.
When David and Sierra Dierking were first married, they had certain expectations about the way they hoped life would unfold.
I had planned on an easy, happy, comfortable life.
When we got married, it was just all, you know, excitement, and you just picture your marriage was going to be the perfect marriage.
Neat and tidy. I love my home to be neat and clean, and my family to be healthy. I despise this sickness.
They had two boys, Jackson and Colton.
Which was an adventure. They are fun and loud and a bit wild. And so that was a little bit more crazy than the story I thought of for myself. But we really just enjoyed doing all kinds of things together, hikes and being outdoors. And yeah, I think I pictured a pretty easygoing life.
You don't really think at that time about the difficult things that you might have to go through and what those vows might actually mean.
I was really blessed to grow up in a Christian family. I was in church every time the doors were open, and vacation Bible school and summer camps. And I think I kind of had a little bit of maybe entitlement or thought that I had deserved to be saved because I was a very good person. I was kind of a people pleaser, and I think in some ways I felt like I was deserving to be saved. Probably just a couple of years ago, I realized just how undeserving anybody is to be saved and how much of a gift of grace it is from God that He would choose me to be saved. It was not anything good that I had done at all. And I feel like that was maybe the time I was truly saved, or maybe just something that the Lord opened my eyes to more clearly. What we deserve is God's cup of wrath, and what we've been given, even if He gave us nothing else beyond just not giving us the wrath, He has given us so many blessings in Christ and even just in our lives, just health and food and family, just the real fact that none of us deserve to be saved really was something that stuck with me.
In 2023, the Dierkings were visiting David's family in Pennsylvania. On the day after Christmas, their 3-year-old son, Colton, became ill.
Colton, when he gets sick, he gets grumpy. And so I just figured that, you know, he wasn't feeling well. He's being grumpy. He was complaining.
His neck was hurting. He didn't really have much of an appetite, and he was just very tired and sleepy.
But then he was laying on the couch, and I went to lift him, and he just cried out. Like, he was in a lot of pain. And that was then that we realized it was, you know, more than just him being sick. Sierra took Colton to the emergency room.
Where they thankfully were able to get us in very quickly and were able to get him admitted and on some strong antibiotics.
It took them a while to figure out what was wrong with him.
They were able to figure out that he had coronavirus as well as strep, and that he had some abscesses on his neck that were pressing against his spinal cord. So it was causing a lot of pain for him. David stayed at the hospital with Colton because at that point I was not feeling very well. I decided to go back to my in-laws and rest for overnight and the next day while David stayed with Colton.
I didn't know how long he was gonna be there. I thought it was gonna be a couple hours for them to figure out what was wrong. They would send us home and end up being overnight. And Sierra and I were texting back and forth, but it was all about Colton. There's a few mentions to her not feeling well, but it was mostly concerned about Colton.
I really wasn't thinking about my own symptoms very much, to be honest. Any mom would know that moms don't really take sick days.
And I was there with him for the next 2 days.
And I developed a really bad cough pretty much out of the blue. It just came on out of nowhere. During that following night, I knew that something was definitely wrong. I was having a hard time taking a deep breath, and it felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest.
And that morning, I sent her a text to ask if she was going to urgent care or straight to the emergency room. And she had responded, I'm not even sure if I can make it. And my mom ended up driving her to the emergency room.
They've pretty quickly put me on oxygen and called David down from Colton's room to come down and let him know that I was sick.
And I came down to be with her, and already the room was just completely full of doctors and nurses. And a nurse came over to me immediately, and she's just like, I just want to make sure you know just how serious this is.
The nurse was saying,
if I was to rate this on a scale of 1 to 10, she would be a 10 sick. I mean, I could tell from her voice that she was scared for Sierra, but I had no idea just how bad it was.
I mean, to us, we were young and healthy. I kind of thought, does that mean I'm spending the night? What does that mean? They admitted me, and
she was diagnosed with influenza B and group A strep, and she had really bad pneumonia.
They realized that the oxygen wasn't staying in my lungs. It was actually going out through holes into my stomach, so they needed to put me to sleep to put a tube down my throat. And I just remember before going to sleep, I was just asking for a drink of water, and I had no idea that it would be like 5 more months until I was able to actually have a drink of water again.
When we got to the ICU, a doctor came in and started talking to me, and I just remember him saying, I trust by now that you've read between the lines. And I hadn't until that point. And I was like, yeah, read between the lines. I looked over and a chaplain was in the room. I was like, okay, it's that serious. The doctor told me if you have any family that's able to make it, I would strongly recommend that they start making plans to travel. And her family pretty much immediately started driving up. I had family all the way from Texas that came to be with us. We had a meeting with one of the doctors, one of the main doctors, and he just laid out everything in front of us. He said, the next 12 hours are gonna be the most critical. Right now, she's on a downward path. Things are gonna keep getting worse. He said, you know, unless we see things start to plateau, there's nothing we can do. medically speaking, we've done everything that we can do. She's on full life support. Like, there's nothing more medically that we can do for her. One of the doctors, he even said, is at this point, you're gonna need to pray for a miracle. And when the doctor left, we were all sitting around a conference table, and my mom just led us in prayer, and she got through. And my oldest brother, he started praying, and he got about 3 words in, and he just broke down. And at that point, all my brothers started crying, and we just had a whole room of family that was just in tears. And growing up with 7 brothers, it's something we just didn't do. You know, we did not cry growing up, and I'd never seen any of my brothers cry. And that's a memory that's gonna stick with me forever. You know, we were just all heartbroken. We couldn't believe it. I would go between Colton's room and her room. They said, well, we want to transfer him to Hershey Medical because they have an ICU there for children, and the hospital he was in didn't have that. And they said, just seeing where things are going, especially with your wife, we want to make sure that he's in a place with, if anything were to go really poorly, he would have access to that. And so then he was transferred to Hershey, which was, I believe, about 40 minutes from where Sierra is at. And then for about a month, I was driving back and forth between the two hospitals. Everything that Sierra was going through, I felt like that was my highest priority. I knew that Colton's situation wasn't as serious. And we had family that was staying with him and watching him. But at the same time, I felt guilt for not spending more time with him. And so I tried to get over there as much as I could. But then when I was with him, you know, I was leaving behind a wife that, it was hour by hour with her. You just didn't know. I didn't know when I left her if that would be the end. And it was like that for a good while. I would leave and I would get a call and say she's had a pneumothorax and her lungs have collapsed. It almost got to the point where I would get a call like that, and it was just like, it was kind of expected, you know, something was gonna go wrong. I would rush back to the hospital, and yeah, at what point do you just ignore your kids? Like, if this stuff was just happening nonstop. Yeah, I was torn between who to be with and when, and I was at the hospital with Sierra the most. I spent every night there. And then I would try to visit Colton during the day, but it wasn't every day. They eventually decided to do surgery, and once they did the second surgery, it was night and day difference with him. Once they did that second surgery, he was just, you know, bouncing on the bed and running around.
David's mom wanted to help and began cleaning up some of the family's things. She discovered the book Sierra had been reading when she went into the hospital. It was Choosing Gratitude by Nancy DeMoss Wohlgemuth. Sierra had been taking notes and underlining.
When we offer thanksgiving to God, we see God in a bigger light ourselves, and we show others how big God is.
My mom put out a post about what Sierra was reading, surprised at the way the Lord had led in Sierra's life leading up to this point, even in what she was reading.
Thanksgiving produces the peace of God in our hearts. If you want to have the peace of God ruling and reigning in your heart, you need to cultivate the attitude of gratitude.
My mom started reading the book, and she asked me at that point if she could hold on to the book. She wanted to read through it herself and just kind of get into the mind of Sierra, learn more about what she was like through her markings in the book. And so she started putting out some posts with some of the things that Sierra had marked in the book, along with, you know, what Nancy had written.
You will be able to rest in your heart even if battle is raging around you. You will have peace, the peace of God. Not because your circumstances have all worked out to your liking, Not because God has granted everything that you've asked him to give you, but because God's presence will come in response to your thanksgiving.
The post that my mom put on Facebook, they had a huge impact on our perspective.
When we thank God, regardless of our circumstances, that spirit of thankfulness, that attitude of gratitude produces the peace of God in our hearts.
Well, we were told very early on that there's a good chance that she might lose limbs. Minimum, we expect maybe a couple fingers, but we'd have to wait and see. We were so focused on saving her life that we just completely put that in the back burner. And I almost kind of forgot about it, honestly. Like, I could see the fingertips start turning black, and then I could see it going up her arm. We would ask every nurse and doctor that came in, so, do you think she's going to lose her limbs? And we got all kinds of different answers. It was, nobody could nail it down. They didn't want to give us any false hope, but, you know, we were just told time will tell. It was at one point that she went down for surgery, and it was a specialist with the arms and legs that just flat out told us she's going to lose all of them. Like, I'm absolutely certain she's going to lose all of them. It was at that point that I completely broke down, and her mom was the one that was kind of the rock. I just lost it, and she said, you know what, we've known this was going to happen, and this is just what needs to be done. You know, it's what needs to be done to save her life, and I would rather have this than not have her at all. It was a Sunday, and one of the doctors came in that morning and said, these legs are not looking good. It looks like there's an infection, and we need to take her down now. When they brought her back up to the room, you know, the first time I saw her, it was just like, you know, a part of her was gone. And it was, you know, it was a very strange thing. It seemed like there was just a half of her. And then she ended up getting an infection in the arm as well. She had surgery on, they did surgery on both of them, so she had both arms removed at the same time. It took her a long time to come to. They had her on a sedatives, and when her heart started working again and her organs started to function again, they told us we're gonna take her off the sedatives, and it should take anywhere between 4 to 6 hours to maybe a day or two. And it ended up taking at least a week for her to come to.
My first memory is actually my sister-in-law reading to me. She was reading from a devotional book, and she was reading from the Bible.
We were really concerned that there might be brain damage.
It was really hard to think clearly. I was on a lot of medicines, a lot of pain medicine, and a lot of my thoughts were very bizarre, kind of. It was hard to figure out what was going on.
Her mom, I believe, first noticed the first flutter of her eyelashes. Then I saw her eyelashes fluttering.
I have one memory, especially in the beginning. One of the nurses at the hospital, she came over and she said, I was just about to read my devotions. Can I read this with you? And so she sat down and she read her devotions with me and prayed with me, and then put on some Christian music. That's probably one of my earliest memories.
And then it moved to barely moving her mouth and trying to communicate things. And it was almost impossible to tell what she was trying to say because she couldn't, you know, move her mouth enough.
Honestly, it still felt like I had my hands and my feet. And so I just remember the moment that I found out I did not, just by honestly looking down. I had not even thought of looking because it felt like I had my limbs. And then I remember seeing the bandages and realizing what had happened. And that was devastating. It was a really, really hard day. I had been kind of upbeat and excited that I was awake and excited to go home. And then I realized I didn't have my limbs. And I remember telling my mom, I couldn't speak, mouthing to my mom, I'm done. And she was like, you're done for the day? You know, and I meant I was really done. I did not want to go through more surgeries. I did not I did not want to keep being alive in a hospital room for another day. It was just, when you're in the hospital, every day is the same. It's just, you don't leave the, I didn't leave my bed for months. Some of the rooms didn't have windows. I was really done. I was done fighting. But at that point, it was too late to be done, that God had a different plan for me, and his plan was not for me to be done. What did I do to deserve this? Like, did I not work in VBS enough times? Like, really, I had these thoughts going through my mind. What did I do to deserve this? Why did God let this happen to me or choose this for me? It was something I really, really struggled with. I couldn't understand how a loving God would do something like that to one of his children. But because of what I had learned before, that I'm undeserving. I am an undeserving person of, I don't deserve good health. I don't deserve an easy life. I don't deserve any of it. And it's all just God's gift of grace that he chose me to be his child and that he is with me every day and he will give strength for whatever he brings. So I couldn't get over that. What did I do to deserve this? And the answer is I have done nothing to deserve anything that God has given me. He's been more than gracious in what he's given to me.
Well, we have to break in right there. But tomorrow we'll hear part two of Sierra and David's story. We all know what it's like to experience loss in some way. But it's hard to imagine what it was like for Sierra losing all her limbs. Tomorrow we'll hear about the layers upon layers of challenges she and David went through. And we'll also hear the amazing perspective Sierra has on gratitude. She has insights that will help you handle times of loss in your own life. And I also hope you'll watch the video that our team made with David and Sierra. It's so deeply moving. I know you'll not only want to watch it yourself, but share it with others. We'll have a link in the transcript to today's program at reviveourhearts.com. When I wrote the book Choosing Gratitude, I had no idea that that book would end up in the hands of a woman like Sierra, who was about to go through so many trials. I'm so grateful the Lord made that connection and allowed Revive Our Hearts to have just a small role in her story.
Yeah, and you'll find a link to that book, Choosing Gratitude, within the transcript of today's program at reviveourhearts.com. I've got to say, it's perfect for cultivating an attitude of gratitude all year round, not just at Thanksgiving. And this month, as a thank you for your donation of any amount, you can receive our 2026 Revive Our Hearts wall calendar. It features the lettering art of Nicole Miyuki, reminding you to bask in the presence of God. It also has a Bible reading plan right on it, helping you stay in sync with thousands of women around the world who will be reading through the Bible next year together. Be sure to ask about the In His Presence wall calendar, available exclusively from Revive Our Hearts when you make a donation at reviveourhearts.com or call us at 1-800-569-5959. Now, we had to end today's program partway through David and Sierra's story. Their challenges have not gone away, and neither has their sense of gratitude. Find out how Sierra navigates life as a busy mom of two boys and what role thankfulness continues to play for this family.
There are moments where we were frustrated with each other because she was trying to communicate with me with things that she wanted, and I was the absolute worst lip reader. But one of the things that we found to do together that really helped was to start listing out the things that we were grateful for. And it made a huge difference. We talked about the house that he had provided us here and how it's much better set up for her and for her wheelchair. And you know, when you start listing out all the things that the Lord has blessed you with, suddenly you realize, you know, we really do have a lot to be thankful for.
That's tomorrow on Revive Our Hearts. This program is a listener-supported production of Revive Our Hearts in Niles, Michigan, calling women to freedom, fullness and fruitfulness in Christ.